Hey everyone, this is your host Ian. I am just giving you a quick heads up. There are a few fouls in this episode. There's a few curse words, so just giving you the heads up on that. Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. Today I am joined by Christy and Mark Brooks as we dig into what it really looks like to send their son east into Spain at 14 to chase the soccer dream. From the Spain soccer process to parenting big dreams and player development, this conversation every parent can learn from. And before we get started, congratulations again to Easton on being named MVP of ECNL U17 All-Star Game. Well deserved. Let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
One thing that y'all talked about that I would have added when we were talking about, I think the question was, how is soccer different over there than it is over here, and how parents dictate things over here and over there. He was like, it's not like that. And I think that American parents, though, believe that they can go over there and act and behave the way that they do here, and your kid will just get kicked off the team, literally. Like, I saw a coach. There was a parent that who'd been over there for 3 years and they had dual citizenship. They moved their family over there and they were playing soccer, and it was on the second team, the lower team that he was on. And the parents were like upset because their kid wasn't getting playing time. And they literally on our group chat, the parent group chat, which I had to translate everything because it was all in Spanish. But every time someone would chat in the parent chat, I would translate and read it. And this dad is going off on the coach, and the coach just was on the chat and on our group, and he knew it. And he's like, right back at him, like, I need to see you after the next practice. And he kicked him off the team. Like, he was okay. Like, and the kid was super upset. And the dad had to eat crow and come back and beg the coach to let his kid play. And he said he wouldn't come to any of the games. He wouldn't. Like, whatever, he would just stay out of it, but that no one's going to talk to his kid that way. And he got really emotional, upset, and he's sorry. But so they let him back on the team, but he hardly got any playing time. And then literally one game later was when Easton had a really bad game, but he asked our academy coach, who had a relationship with the team, like, and could speak Catalan. He's from there and all the things. The academy coach went and said, hey, he needs some additional training. He wants to still go to his three-team trainings, but we know that the A-team trains on Monday night as well, not just Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Could he train with them and get an extra training so that he can improve and get better? And when the A-team coach saw him, he was like, why isn't he on our team? And so they moved him over. It pissed the B-team coach off because he thought that me as a parent, an American parent, had gone and said, I don't like this team, my kid's better, I want him on that team. And I'm like, I don't talk to anybody. Like, I know, like, we've always told Easton, even in America, if you don't like the position you're playing, you don't like the playing time you're getting, it's up to you to go talk to the coach and tell the coach, hey, I don't like this position, or why do you have me here? Is this a punishment? Or why didn't I get any more minutes than I did? We make him do that. We don't fight those battles for him.
He has to advocate for himself.
He has to advocate for himself. So when he went there, he knew this is, if I want something different, I've got to talk to the coaches.
What kind of kid was he when he was younger? Because I think this really will tell who he is as a person today. Because I think personalities show through on who people are.
I'll let you go.
I'll say he was energetic. Definitely was maybe a little bit fearless in the things that he wanted to go do and try. And even though he didn't like baseball, he gave it a shot. He
was always athletic, but
yeah, did walk rock climbing a little bit here and there. It was just always, oh, I want to go do that and spin upside down and just do different things. I was in gymnastics a little bit, but when he hit soccer, you know, he definitely was more controlled. He was goofy and all that kind of stuff when he was little.
He's a rule follower though, and he always has been.
Like, yeah,
he even from tiny.
Yeah. Tell me what to do and I'll go do it.
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
If the rules are you can't have cookies after 10, whatever the rule is, like if he knows that it's a stated rule, he does not break it, nor does he want anyone else to break it.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely regimen in his way. As he was growing up, he became extremely more regimen. So you talk about gathering stuff and like he does it on his own. He's been doing that since he was 10. So
we've never forgotten shin guards or cleats or anything, like jerseys. He's always...
He's learned if he did it once and never again.
But I don't really recall any times he's done it. Like it's, he even has like extra shin guards in his bag for kids that do forget. Yeah. It's like...
He's weird.
No, strange. I don't. My son carries a second pair of cleats in his bag and he carries... He's forgotten his cleats once because he was getting ready and we told him to go do something and... Thankfully, he had his second pair always in his bag and his jersey, and I can give you stories of recently of how much he is a kid, talking about being a rule follower. He gets told to go brush his teeth as he's putting his socks on, goes brush his teeth, has one, because he cuts the feet off, has one sock, both socks on, and one of the cut foot off socks up.
That's great.
And puts the other one down and goes brush his teeth because he was told to go brush his teeth. He moved on. And he forgot the other sock on his bed in his bedroom as he was getting ready that morning. We get to the game and thankfully the manager had the extra socks he could borrow. Yeah. He has, but he carries two pairs of shin guards and cleats. And
yeah.
But I think that's amazing. I think those are the ones, those traits that kids pick up early
when
they're serious about it, come through farther on. As he's going through it, and I bet this killed you as a parent, Mark. I know it kills me as every day that my son plays soccer growing until I learned to love soccer.
Yeah.
I tried for about 2 years to force him to love baseball, and it failed miserably.
Yeah. So
when did you find that serious note in him towards soccer? He fell in love with it fairly early.
Yeah, he did. As he mentioned when he played with the Frogs, his coach at the time, Kevin Webb, was definitely one that just was about having fun.
He loved the sport so much, Kevin, that he would, like, you couldn't be a kid playing for him and not love soccer. Like, he loved it. And he loved, no matter how, there was kids on that team that sucked, and there were kids that were super fast, like Easton. His own child, who he wanted more than anything to play soccer, was the biggest kid out there, and bless his heart, he just didn't care about soccer at all. And this poor man was just like trying to get him to love it. I think he loves it now, but he wasn't in it like Easton was at the time. And
but
Kevin was great, and he made Easton, I think, fall in love with it even more.
For sure. And that's what I knew when the third year of playing with the Frogs, he was 8 or 7 or 8 or whatever. And he was like, I want to go try out for a select team. And we were like, okay, the dedication and the time it's going to take for that. Are you ready? He said, yes, I'm ready. And as poor as he performed in the tryout, the opportunity was there. Didn't play on a team for a full year at that club until he was ready. So he trained for a full year and really didn't play for sure on a team.
I think we played soccer box and
three-man, the pit. 3v3, which was normal, but it wasn't.
He never had a Saturday game with
all the strings. It was just training mostly. It was then. Now, I still had my reservations about was he really, not even just soccer, but him as a player, was it going to be something that I could foresee him pursuing even from a college perspective? It wasn't until he was 12 that I knew that he really was dedicated 100% into that. So
I think I knew sooner, but
you did, but I didn't.
He talked a lot about the love of the game, and I think that is driven from the parents and the joy of the game. Because we suck the joy out of, not saying, association. Yeah. Adults suck the joy out of everything because we look everything through an adult lens. So at what point was this through prior kids' experience, prior learning experiences with kids playing sports, that you learned just to back off, let them find their love and joy of the game? Or was this a moment that it was just at the right moment at the right time?
I can see Easton puts more pressure on him than either of us put on him by far himself. And he is his worst critic. He can have a great game and we'll get in the car afterwards and we'll say, how do you think he played? And it's horrible, but he scored 5 goals. He is his worst critic. And I can see him internalizing things and being too. And so I have focused this past year, especially on whenever I see those wheels turning in his head and I see him getting into a super critical place or whatever, I think we both this year have been very, just go out there and have fun. You're back in the States. You're not in Spain. All of your friends are here. You're getting to play with all of your friends. You're getting to play. Just have fun. What are you doing? You're overthinking everything. And when you do that, you mess up and you don't play your best game. So just go have fun. And
you got to think that the pressure of going international and then coming back for the reason that we came back, that it weighs on a kid. And he thinks, I have to perform more so here than I did over there just because I was over there. And they look at him as, oh, this, you're the savior of our team.
Yeah, yeah.
And that pressure can get to you as a kid. And so definitely it took him a couple of months before he realized what we were saying was, go out there and have fun. You'll perform. Don't worry about it, regardless of what you did a year ago. Don't worry about that. And now he's settled in.
Yeah.
But it took him a couple of months to really do that and really find his way back to playing like he knows he can.
That's amazing. I'm just thinking, because it can take time. A couple of months is pretty quick recovery to come back and figure it all out. And,
yeah.
But getting, before he even goes over, what was the, was it the coaches that he had telling you, he's in line to go do this? He said he went over a few times to go play and got to experience Spain or wherever. Well, maybe it wasn't Spain, but 2 or 3 times
for
a few weeks.
Yeah. He went to Spain. Time to go see.
Yeah, when he was 12, we started doing the 2-week international trips through his club at Alpha Forms. And the opportunities of kind of opening up relationships internationally, meeting through that club, the relationships that club had, and a couple of partners over there, and just talking to them. Like we said, the first year was, hey, he's good, but he needs to work on these things. And really, it was probably year 2. It was, okay, we're open for him coming over here full time. What opportunities are there? And then it was, yeah, we have some things. We can probably pull this, but nothing ever materialized. So at 14, we were like, okay, we've been hearing Spain is the way. That's the country, that top country. You want to go play there. You want to be engaged.
Ben Ron Hogsett loved Spain and the way that their style of play.
Their style of play.
He just like Kevin Webb, when Easton played for the Frogs, he instilled a love of soccer in him. Ron Hogsett did the same thing for Easton and Spain. Yeah. And he, in his eyes, it became where he could visualize himself and see himself playing one day. But it never, other than those little 2-week stints and little things like that, it never really became a real opportunity. I don't know if they did not believe that we would do everything.
That we were serious.
That we were serious about actually letting him move over there. Or if it was they didn't actually have a plan for a kid who really was serious and wanted to move over. And they needed to figure that out on their end. Or I don't know what it was, but Easton kind of took it upon himself to talk to this coach that was visiting for the summer from Spain and asked him, like, do you have teams I can try out over there? I want to move over. And when the coach said, sure, let me get you some tryouts, then it was like,
game on.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And what was it like for you as a family then? From the sounds of it, he's been gung ho. Did you have to pull in the reins ever, or did you just let him go and let him figure it out?
We just have let him go.
We're not helicopter parents. We don't.
We just believe that if our kid, any of them, if they want something and they're willing to put the work in, then we'll do the work on our end to make that dream come true.
Yeah.
If it's, we need to get you a visa so you can play over there, that's on me. I got to figure that out. You did your part. You did the reps. You did the practice. You took it serious. You got your own tryout over there.
You got noticed. You got accepted. Here we go. Let's figure it out.
It's now my job as your parent to remove any of the other roadblocks.
Yeah.
And so we're not a family to, it's really me. I jump in with both feet and everyone else follows. No.
Pretty much.
Like, we can do this. Let's go.
Yeah.
You said you're not helicopter parents. I feel as a parent, my wife has always said that our kids have the dreams, our job is to help facilitate them.
I love that.
Yep.
And I'm the type that I am head over heels. I was not a soccer person. I was a baseball and wrestling all through high school. And then having kids, my kids decided to play soccer and gymnastics. So now I'm learning two different sports that I have nothing knowing anything about. But I've jumped head over heels into soccer.
Yeah.
And I have spent more time talking soccer, learning about soccer than I probably an unhealthy obsession is the best way of putting it. So... Mm-hmm. Did you find yourself down that road, or did you find yourself like, this is their journey and let them do it, and I'm going to stand back and just enjoy the moment?
That's me. I'm standing back. She's learning everything about soccer.
Yeah.
She is his manager. Like, she does it all.
I feel like it's if he truly is going to go pro one day, I feel like the stars all have to align. He's got to have the talent, one. He's got to be at the right place at the right time. He's got to have people that believe in him, from coaches to, I know that he wants it and I know that he believes he can do it. But the reason he believes that is because he's had coaches that have seen his work ethic, have seen, he may not have always been the most talented kid on the pitch, but now he's gotten that through hard work. But he has earned the respect of all of these coaches, I believe. Even I saw it when he went to Spain, and I could see them. If I'd go watch a practice, he's the one giving 500%. They would have the kids run around the pitch at the beginning, like laps around the pitch to just get warmed up. And all the other kids start running this tiny little circle in the middle of the field, and they're just chit-chatting. And Easton is hitting every corner, and he's just running by himself. And at the end, though, of the season, the kids were following Easton and running and hitting all the corners. And coaches see that, and they see, this is a leader on my team. This is a team that's a kid that's making other kids better through his work ethic, through his just doing all the things. And so he's earned the respect of the coaches, but because of that, like, they believe in him, and that belief in him, I feel like, lets him believe he can go all the way.
Yeah.
So it's been a full circle of, it's him doing it, but because of everything he's doing, these coaches believe in him, and they want to see him get all the way and do it. And they're excited, and they're his cheerleaders, and coaches that haven't trained him in years are excited and advocating for him and doing everything they can to help him to see this thing through.
It's amazing. So when this decision came about, Easton answered it pretty well, I think. But for you as a family, when did this decision come about for him to go over, and how did it affect not just him, but the family dynamics? Because I think you guys were, from the sounds of it, you went over, Christy, you said you went over for a bit. I don't know. I think that's the second year, if I caught it correctly. And then, but you're still apart. I just can't imagine.
Yeah, I would the never.
Dynamics.
I wouldn't stay with him either when I went over there. Like, I'd just get a hotel or a hostel or a whatever and stay. And then if I saw him, it would be at his trainings or it would be at his game on the weekend. And then, like, maybe one night a week, I would check him out at his academy and take him to dinner with a few of his buddies. But I think we were both scared to tell our parents that we were sending him over, because I know they know me and they know that, but it was, none of our kids had ever done anything like this before. Yeah. And with the older ones. And I think we literally thought our families were going to commit us because we'd lost our minds.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to play baseball in college. And my dad was like, you're not doing that. You're going to school. You're getting a degree. Sorry. You want to go walk on. You can try to walk on, but you're not
education
playing
baseball
in college. Education is number one. You can't make a living off a sport. And we're giving Easton that opportunity if he chooses, or if he so chooses to pursue, to try to
and
go
my parents
make a living.
Are so. Very conservative, very scared of their own shit. Like, they've never gone out of the country. So for them, you're letting Easton move there
by himself. By
what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Who are you? You're not my daughter.
Yeah.
But once we went, everybody jumped on the bandwagon and got behind him and said, okay, let's do it. We're going to support him too. And
yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
So why did he let it happen at 14 and not later or maybe earlier? What was the age importance for 14?
That kind of was what we were.
The opportunity presented itself. One, this coach from Spain came over, trained with us for the summer at Alpha. And then we'd also, and I don't know if this is the truth or not, but we'd always heard, like, in Spain, early. You need him there by age 14 because that's when they start cutting some of their players that have been in their system forever. If you're not, they can tell. If you're not going to make it by then, they get rid of you. And you can go to some of the other lower teams that aren't in La Liga or aren't in the main divisions over there, but you need to get over there and get seen at that age. Or if you wait till you're 18, it's too late. So we said, okay, if anybody's going to be able to do it, it's him with his personality, his work ethic, his
maturity.
It's like it's all aligning. Let's just see where it goes. And if he makes it, great. And if he doesn't, he comes back and he has a normal high school life.
Yeah. Yep.
So he goes over at 14. He does the residency. From the sounds of it, you visited. You didn't do much other than visiting. How was that first year for him as a parent? Because I think that's the thing that he may not see it, but did you see him blossoming because of the independence and a chance to grow as an individual versus being in the normal structure that a 14-year-old kid would be in? Since you have older kids now that are older than him, you can see the
I saw a little of both. It was hard because, and just like with my daughter that goes to high school right across the street from our house, when your kids are not having an easy time with friends or your kids are not having an easy time in their sport and they're sad and they're going through tough times, you want to take all that away from them and you don't want them to be sad or whatever. And he had some struggles with some of the kids in the academy that would give him a hard time because he always was working so hard, and sometimes they wanted to goof off and joke around. And Easton was like, we're here. And those kids were from America too that were in that academy. And we are being given this incredible opportunity and y'all are goofing around. He's like, when we're out there training, we should be training and soaking up every bit of this instruction that we can. And you guys are by goofing off, you're taking away from my training. Get your shit together. And sorry, that probably can't be said on podcast. I don't know. Okay. But he was like, just so frustrated. So then the kids gave him a hard time, and they didn't, they were, get a life, dude. We're here in Spain to have fun, not to, and it was hard for me to watch him being made fun of or have no friends at the beginning, or, and same thing on his team. He eventually got into, he made a really good teammate friend on the second team. And then when he moved up, he had no friends. And another thing that I will say, and this kind of goes back to that other question when we were talking about parents dictating things, he got moved up to that, to the first team in his age group. And I went to the first three games, I think, two games maybe, the two weekends that he played for them. And he didn't start, obviously, and I didn't expect him to. He'd just been moved up. But the second or third game, I was sitting in the bleachers with the academy coach, like his academy coach came to watch, and he goes, he was all giddy, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening right now. And he goes, do you see what's going on? And I'm like, they're warming up. And he was like, but do you see where your kid is? And I was like, with all the other ones? What? And he's, no, he's going to start this game. He's one of the starters. You can, because they were warming up, the starters over
just
here.
Just the 11.
And I got so excited. But then I got, oh shit, all these other parents are going to be pissed because my kid just got moved up and now he's starting and I'm going to be hated by all these parents. And they were literally so nice and were like, immediately were coming up as soon as he walked out in that starting line out, like to do the like introduction of the teams. They were like, your kid's going to do awesome. He's going to do so great. He's such a great addition to our team. We're so excited. And I'm like, whoa, this would not happen in America. Yeah. I just took someone's spot and they were demoted to the second team because we took their spot. And now all these parents are like congratulating and they're like excited he's on their team because he's going to make their team better and let their help their team win. And in America, it just isn't that way. It's so cutthroat and so hateful. And it shouldn't be. These are kids. You should celebrate the other kids' victories and their wins. And if they make your team better, it's awesome.
You got off script.
I did. This is not
the
question.
No, you're great. You're great. There's no script here. This is...
It was not a script you asked me. It just made me think about it, but... It was a little bit of, he had high moments and low moments
yeah,
over there.
It's the same as he would have here.
Same as he would have here.
Yeah.
And you just have to watch your kid go through it and
yeah.
pray that God will take care of him when you can't. Yeah.
I think that's so important because I can't imagine as a parent, like I'm thinking of my 12-year-old son or my 8-year-old daughter right now. It's crazy. He talked about Christian Pulisic being his favorite player because, or some of the role model he looks up to because he's doing yeah. something similar as him. And I think it comes back to the philosophy in the home. I think it comes back to the environment you're playing in and all those things. And Christy, you talked about the stars aligning. I think that's so true.
Yeah.
I think of athletes and the moments that they get a chance to shine and the moments that allow them to.
Yeah.
And we're going to dive a little bit more deeper into okay. the parenting, and we're going to come back to this American topic because
okay.
we talked about it prior to me starting all this over again. And then you bring it up again, because I think there's a huge difference to all this. Was there a moment in any of this journey for him to go to Spain you wanted to say no? Or you guys said, like, it's his journey. You're going to let him do it. You're both opposite ends here from the sounds of it to a degree. One's all in and one's
yeah
back off.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that – there could have been some reservation, but, again, it probably goes back to me probably thinking, is it the right thing at the right time? But that was it. I don't think it was never a full no for me, but I certainly had my reservations about sending him and is he ready? But I had the feeling he was ready, and it wasn't about me being ready either, because I'm definitely one, I love my kid, but I'm like, hey, again, you go do you. So I don't think I was ever a full no. So...
I think the only time I was ever in no was when I was having to deal with the immigration lawyers over there yeah. and the government and all the hoops that you have to jump through to get your visa and to keep, and you there, there is literally no roadmap. There's, right. I thought about writing a book, like how to do this for dummies, but it's every single person I've talked to has had a different roadblock with the Spanish government, or with if they're in Portugal, or if they're in Germany. Like, these, there's no cut and dry, this is how you do it. And if they decide that they want more money from you, you just have to give it to them. It's just crazy. It's just, and so there did come a time when I was like, oh my God,
this isn't going to happen.
We literally thought we were done. And now you're telling me I need something else. What? So that was frustrating for me, but we hid all of that from Easton because he doesn't need to worry about any of that. He needs to just focus on his job.
Yeah.
I like how you said it, to worry about his job. That's all that you can let them worry about. So as you're going through this process, the first year he was on his own. The second year, were you more there, Christy, with him then? I'm trying to remember.
We need to clarify. Yeah. So he was only there from
a full school year.
Yeah, full school year till he was 15.
And then soccer ends in June over there. Right. They come home because there's no,
yeah,
nothing for them to do. So, they don't train. They don't do anything.
And to really back up, so he played, 3 months, and then he lost his FIFA card. So when he had his FIFA card taken away, he couldn't play. So
he could train, but he couldn't play in official matches.
So from December to basically June, he did all training except for the Mick Cup, where, because it's a tournament, anybody can play. So his team went into the Mick Cup as a team and performed, and that was pretty much it. Otherwise, if he had a friendly with somebody, that was the only thing. But they really didn't do friendlies because they were focused on their training and their league games that was once a weekend.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he really competed for 5 months.
When you go to Spain and you're playing soccer, there is all of the Spanish teams. So like Girona, Barcelona, all these professional clubs have youth teams, similar to how FC Dallas has their academy team. Yeah. It's not like how FC Dallas has 75 million teams. They literally just have, in that age group, an A team, a B team, a C team. And depending on the age group, they might have
another or two, but
all the way to G. Yeah. Like that many teams. But they... then all these professional clubs also have a international team where all they do is play friendlies. They do not play any official league matches. You are not officially in the federation. You're not playing with a FIFA card. You're not playing. You're just basically, it's like these Barca academies where you can go overseas and you can live the Spanish dream and play for Barcelona. You're playing
in their international club.
In their international club. You're playing another, with your friendlies.
Another international
club. You're not playing Federation Soccer in La Liga.
Yeah.
So you talked about this FIFA card being taken away. What does that mean?
Okay. You get it. You have to be over there for more than 3 months. You have to have a visa. You can have a student visa if you're old enough. You can have a digital nomad visa, which is what I had. You can have a non-lucrative, which means you have enough money in your bank to just move over there and not work. And you're just like on a year-long vacation. You can buy property in some of these countries and get a golden visa. But whatever type of visa you have that allows you to stay more than 3 months, you have to have that first. Then once you are over there and you make a team, you try out and you make a team, files for your FIFA card. Just like here in the United States, you get a U.S. player's card, or you get and in order to transfer to a different team, if you're an ECNL player, you have to have a release from your club. It's the same over there. The actual FIFA, and it's called REFE in Spain, is the governing FIFA body. REFE or RIFA?
REFEF or REFF. Yeah.
They are the governing body. Like over here, it's MLS for FIFA. Over there, it's this. Every country has a governing body for FIFA. And so the clubs will request a player's card for that player. And that organization will then make sure they're not registered with any other club, just like we do here.
And then they'll submit to FIFA.
And then FIFA will give them a player's card, an actual FIFA card that says they're allowed to play in Spanish league matches.
Yeah.
And so we got one of those because we got a visa. We moved over there. He moved over there. And for whatever reason, we were told that somebody said we needed to be investigated because he was an American kid over there playing soccer without a visa. And so FIFA has to investigate with all the problems going on with child trafficking for soccer and all the other things. FIFA takes it super seriously and they investigate every single case, and they can take as long as they want to investigate it. It could take 5 years to investigate it. Like, it's no urgency whatsoever because you cannot move to another country just to play soccer.
Right.
So you have to be moving over there for a career, or for he's going to school here because he's a student or whatever, but it can't be we're moving over there to play soccer. So we couldn't rush this and say, oh my gosh, he's missing all of his soccer games. So we had to just relax and be like, okay, work it out. But then we had to make a decision as a family.
Do we go back for you?
During the Mick Cup, because of how well he played, he got noticed by other teams. There was a FIFA agent that said, I want you to come and try out for Rayo Vallecano, which is in Madrid instead of Barcelona. They're very well known. They're a huge professional club that they're really great. He went over. We took him out. Since he wasn't playing any official matches anyway, we took him out in the spring of his school and his club to go for a two-week trial at Rayo Vallecano. He made that team. He made their academy team, their official team. And our plans were that he would move over in August to live in a Spanish dorm and play for Rayo Vallecano. The FIFA agent that was helping us get his FIFA card situated and get all the...
Trying to get
all of those hurdles that were in the way. He was trying to expedite the review of Easton's card so they could see, yep, he's legitimately here. He's okay to be here and play. But we told them, we're going to give you until the first official match in September. We'll move him over there in August. But if by September 17th, his FIFA card isn't back, we're not going to stay in Spain and just have him train. We'll bring him back to the States where he can actually play either MLS or ECNL and be getting training and be actually playing in matches and be considered for the U.S. national team pool and all of that. And so that was a hard decision as a family because I felt like I was letting Easton down because I hadn't been able to expedite the FIFA card situation. And so I had a real hard time when we brought him back in October, end of September, because I felt like I had failed him and he was not getting to stay because I couldn't get it resolved.
Yeah, he was there for 4 weeks.
I think he was there for 6 weeks.
It was middle of September when he came back because they had already started school. But either way, but our decision was we didn't see an end to him getting his FIFA card back.
This year.
So we were like, I don't want to pay, and you have to still pay to be over.
Room and board. We didn't pay for his soccer, but we were paying for a dorm for him to live in.
And the things.
Food and all that kind of stuff. So we were like,
let's just take this year, bring him back, let him compete, train, do all those things, and then we'll reassess. Because when he turns 16, he can get a student visa. And that will open the door to them reviewing his file again, which is the whole case, and he can go back over there. So right now, come this summer, we're...
Yeah, he's already going to it's in August, and it's a showcase in Madrid that 10 clubs from Spain and Portugal that are all like top level clubs in La Liga or whatever the Spanish Federation is called. I can't remember the Spanish Federation, but the Portugal Federation, but they all come and watch. And if there's 100 kids that get to attend, they're anywhere from ages 16 to 23. And it's like a big combine for where you're just going and you train in the mornings. You do international IQ testing too of the game. And if they want you, then they extend an offer and then you go and become part of their team. The other thing, too, is in Spain, they can sign you at 16 to play for their professional team, for that matter. So it's a big opportunity for him in August to go back, or July, to go back and do this trial.
That's amazing. So he'll go on. He has a chance to go over on a student visa to go play, then work from there. Now, with his already experience over there, are you still staying in contact with coaches and communicating with people that were over there that you've made contacts with, this FIFA agent possibly?
Or... And that's kind of my, like, I'm
the manager.
I just have, even when I was, when he was at Alpha and we got invited to be part of their international squad that did international game, all kind of international stuff, I was basically working for Ron. I wasn't getting paid. I was just working. I was organizing all their international trips. So it gave me access, kind of like you doing this podcast, you get access to people you wouldn't normally, and you make those relationships and those network connections. And you, so yeah, when I had a problem with his FIFA card, I immediately called that FIFA agent that I knew that had come down here and had brought professional players at one point to do an ID camp or on at Alpha. And I reached out and I was like, you told me if I ever need anything, I have family in Spain, and reach out, and I need you. Figure this out for me, because I am not Spanish and I do not know how your government works or how any of this works. And then same thing with like his coaches that he had at the academy. We've stayed in contact with them, and this coach that got him the tryout, like I stay in contact with all of them. Even as the coaches, when he was going over internationally with Alpha to do little tournaments or camps or things like that, we met a lot of the people that run a lot of those clubs as the head honcho there. We've stayed in contact with him, and we got married, and we sent our congratulations for that. Like I've stayed in contact with that circle of people. So I know, and then I can also, let's say he goes to this combine thing, this Madrid showcase, and one of these teams wants him. I don't know anything about this team. I don't know if it's any good. I can look up their stats. I don't know if they're a team that's going to be the right move for Easton to get him to play professional one day. So I call those people and I'm like, what do you think about this team? Is this a really good opportunity for him, or is this a crap team that we don't want to be a part of?
Today's conversation with Christine Merck highlighted the process of what Spain's soccer process really looks like. The sacrifice, the uncertainty, the work ethic, and the reality behind chasing a dream overseas as a family. What stood out to me most, it wasn't just a soccer conversation. It was a parenting conversation, supporting a kid's dream, letting them advocate for themselves, helping remove roadblocks without taking over, and trusting the process. Those are the lessons that hit home for me as a parent, and I hope they do for other families listening as well. We're not done yet. In part two, we shift into soccer parenting and everything families can learn from their experience. This podcast, I've enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there. Please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.